So we'll recite the Pranam Mantra of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Satchidananda Bhaktivinoda, who is transcendental energy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis headed by Srila Rupa. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksharun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Kurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Namaha. I offer obeisances unto Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur Satchidananda Namine, whose name is Satchidananda. So he is known as Satchidananda Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Gaura Shakti Swarupaya. Swarupa refers to the very personification of. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur is considered to be the personification of Gaura Shakti, of the transcendental energy of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Rupanuga Varayate. So, Vara means the best. Varaya means unto the best. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the best. Best among who? Rupa Anuga. Anuga means a follower. So, the followers of Rupa Goswami are called Rupanugas. So, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we are called Rupanugas. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is glorified here as being the best amongst the Rupanugas. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a very exceptional acharya in our line, because it is considered that he is the root of the modern-day Krishna consciousness movement. Of course, the Krishna consciousness movement is extremely old. It is going on from time immemorial. There is no time when the Krishna consciousness movement started, because it is an eternal movement. And even in the ancient times, then perhaps in the medieval times, various personalities have emerged to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. Sometimes, as it happened about 500 years ago, the Supreme Lord himself comes to establish the Krishna consciousness movement again, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. However, as it happens in the material world, whenever things start, there is always a process of degeneration. And especially spiritual things, spiritual lines of succession, or the transmission of spiritual knowledge, often encounters impediments. And then some great personalities come along and revive that knowledge once again. And this is how it happens through the ages. So, after Madhavendra Puri, Ishwar Puri, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then Ramananda Rai, and Swarup Damodar, then the six Goswamis, and then we had Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda Pandit, Srinivas Acharya. This was like a glorious phase in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. And then they came across a little dark phase for some time. We had, of course, Kaviraj Goswami, who was there before that. And after that, this period came Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vidya Bhushan. So the dark phase after the period of the six Goswamis and Narottam, Srinivas and Shyamananda, till Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in that dark phase, there was short periods of punctuation where we had these acharyas coming in. Great acharyas like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vidya Bhushan. But again, after Baladev Vidya Bhushan, there was a bit of a dark phase. And what happened was that the cult, of course the word cult has a different connotation today, but the sense in which Srila Prabhupada uses the term is the older connotation, where the cult refers to something very, a path, a very glorious thing. So the cult of pure devotion. So the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came into disrepute, because the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to get misrepresented in the society because of many so-called followers of his. And each of them started giving different twists to the teachings of Mahaprabhu. And as the time went by, there were so many distorted forms of Mahaprabhu's sampradaya appearing in the society. So much so that amongst the intelligent and cultured classes in the state of Bengal, Mahaprabhu's movement, and indeed even the term Vaishnava, became almost like a pejorative. You know what a pejorative is? It's like a bad word. So when you said Vaishnava, people would think of people doing all sorts of immoral things and etc. So these were called apasampradayas, which means people who claim to belong to the bona fide sampradaya, but actually their teachings, their beliefs, their practices were opposed to the genuine sampradaya. So they were called apasampradaya. And they preached apasiddhanta, not the correct siddhanta. Siddhanta is the proper conclusive teachings of the sampradaya. But these apasampradayas were teaching apasiddhanta, the wrong siddhanta. So it was a very dangerous time. And there was no sense of direction for the people of this land. And then came along certain great personalities like Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, also later Gaurkishore Das Babaji, but they were mostly reclusive by nature. And they were living in the dhams, performing intense bhajan. But the general public did not know so much about them. After Jagannath Das Babaji came Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it was he who actually established the modern day Krishna consciousness movement. The mission of Gaudiya Math, established by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was largely based on the teachings and the books of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And this was personally acknowledged by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So it was with the coming of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur that the teachings and the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became properly established once again within human society in the modern day and age. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's contributions are therefore seminal, therefore very, very important. And his role, his contributions are very, very significant, momentous, historical. So let's discuss briefly some of the important contributions of Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur. First, and very importantly, he wrote books. And these books were propagated far and wide. Now we see that all the acharyas wrote books, starting with the six Goswamis. And these literatures, of course, were distributed by Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, and Shyamananda Pandit. So Bhaktivinod Thakur carried forward that legacy of writing books because he understood the importance of literature. That simply speaking, although very, very important, was not enough because we tend to forget what we hear. But if we read the books, and these books are available with us, then we can read them again and again. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur established a printing press. It must have been a very rudimentary form of printing press because in those days, technology wasn't that developed. And proofreading and publishing book was an intensely painstaking and laborious and time-consuming process. Those of you who are a little older in age and are familiar with how printing used to happen in the old days will know how painstaking it had to be. And, you know, even nowadays you have autocorrect and you have all sorts of typesetting, softwares available, and you can publish from home. You can do all sorts of things. And it's so easy to publish nowadays. But in those days, you know, you had these machines and the typewriters, and if you made one single mistake, you had to type the whole thing all over again. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur started that, and it was followed ably by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who also established printing presses, which he called the Brihat Mridanga, the big Mridanga, large Mridanga. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur then started writing books. Can you mention some of the famous books written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur? See, everybody said Jaiva Dharma. The first book that comes to mind when we think of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is Jaiva Dharma. That's probably his magnum opus. Harinam Chintamani, yes, of course, that was Haridas Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about Haridas Thakur's conversation. Harinam Chintamani, yes. Any other books? Yes, The Life and Precepts of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This was a historic book because it was written in the English language. The Goswamis wrote in Sanskrit. Narottam Das wrote in the local Bengali language, not even the very scholarly Bengali language, but the ordinary Bengali language that could be understood by people at large. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote largely in Bengali and Sanskrit, but this was the first time he wrote a book in the English language. He was very well versed with the English language. As a young man, he had read the works of all the English philosophers and very famous writers of England, because the British government was ruling India at that time, especially in Bengal. So he was quite well versed. In fact, he would teach, I forget the name, there was some famous Englishman, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught him how to write properly in English, write good quality English. So he was very well versed in English. And he wrote this book in English because he wanted to send it outside of India. And then he sent it to the McGill University in Montreal, Canada. So the first time probably that a book in the English language was written about Krishna conscious philosophy, particularly about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it was sent outside of India. That happened, if I'm not mistaken, in 1896, which was the year of the appearance of Srila Prabhupada. So some very interesting coincidence. And he wrote many other books also, and he also had collections of songs like the Kalyana Kalpataru, the Gita Mala, etc., the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. He published commentaries of the previous acharyas on the Bhagavad Gita, etc. So he wrote over 100 books. And this was a very, very great contribution. And through these books, he established the proper conclusions of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Along with that, he also extensively lectured. He spoke. And it's amazing how he found time to do all these things, because he was initially a headmaster for some time in a school, and then he gave it up and he took up employment with the British government. He became a very respectable officer, the deputy magistrate, and he was very well known as a very efficient officer of the government. And he would give, mete out justice very appropriately. He was very sharp. He could understand the case very quickly. And the clarity of his understanding and intelligence and judgments was legendary. So much so that the British government was reluctant to release him from service when he sought retirement. And they even, it is said, built a railway line all the way up to his house in Navadvip, where he stayed in Godrumdvip. So he was so efficient as a hard-working officer, but still he found time to write books, to give lectures, to attend to his family, and also to perform his occupational duties. We read about his timetable, and it's almost inconceivable how somebody can do things like that. He went to bed at 8 o'clock at night, woke up at 10 o'clock. That means he slept only for 2 hours. And then he wrote from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. And then from 4 to 4:30, he rested for half an hour. And then 4:30 to 7, he chanted japa. And then at 7 o'clock, he freshened up and then I think went on to have some prasadam and so on. And then he began to read Shastra for 2 hours. And then he got ready and went to work. And from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock, he was at work. 1 to 2, he would come back for lunch. Then from 2 to 5, again, he was at the court as the officer, and then he would come back, spend time with family and do his correspondence or whatever, meeting other people. And then again, 8 o'clock, he would go to bed. And his breakfast was, it seems, half a liter of milk, 2 chapatis and fruit. So he managed with 2 to 2.5 hours of sleep. And imagine, in the rest of the time, he performed activities that required intense concentration and attention. You know, he couldn't afford to doze off to sleep when he was sitting in the court or when he was writing. You know, see, he was extremely attentive. Naturally, such examples cannot be imitated. But it goes to show that devotees must utilize their time very efficiently, very nicely in the service of the Lord. So he would write books, and then also he would go and lecture extensively. As far as lectures are concerned, there are many historic lectures that have been recorded of his speaking. And he also engaged in discussions with the intelligentsia of Calcutta. Calcutta at that time was renowned as a seat of learning. And all the intellectuals used to gather there. And there was, I'll just make reference to one particular discussion he had with one such intellectual. His name was Bankim Chandra Chattopadhyay. Any of you have heard of him? Okay, Bankim Chandra Chattopadhyay was a famous intellectual, a writer, and I think he wrote the famous Anandamath and the Vande Mataram, which is quite popular today also. He wrote a book on Krishna called Krishna Charita, and it had all sorts of faulty conclusions. And he came to Bhaktivinoda Thakur because he had heard about his reputation as a great intellectual, as a scholar, and so on. So he came and discussed the contents of his book with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not at all pleased to read the book because it was Bankim Chandra's opinion that Krishna was a human being. He was an exceptional human being. He was endowed with some exceptional talents and abilities, but he was just a human being. So that was his assertion. It was quite common. And even today, it's quite common to find people who will think that Krishna and Ram are ordinary people and that we can also become Krishna and Ram. Actually, some years ago, a very famous yogi from India came here to England. And straight from the airport, he was taken to our Krishna Avanti school. So since I happened to be at the manor at that time, the devotees requested me to also be there and to translate his lecture, because he would speak in Hindi, and so I would translate from Hindi into English for the benefit of the students and everyone else who was attending there. So I began the translation as he was speaking. So long as he was speaking about exercise and yoga and breathing and all that, everything was fine. And then he started getting into realms that he shouldn't have started getting into, philosophy. For many of these yogis, it's good they just stick to yoga and they don't talk of philosophy. So then he got carried away and he started telling the children in Hindi, you know, by doing this yoga, you can also become Krishna, you can become Ram. You know, so that was in Hindi. And I don't think his understanding of English was very good. So then I amended the thing, and nobody was the wiser, because I don't think anybody in the audience understood Hindi, so they didn't know what I was saying. They didn't know what he said, rather. And he didn't understand English, so then they didn't know what I said to everybody. So then I translated and said, by doing this, it will help you become pure devotees of Lord Ram and Lord Krishna. Everybody was smiling and happy. He was happy. They were happy. So it was fine. So anyway, the point is that the point is that it is quite common even today among prominent people to consider Krishna and Ram as ordinary people, human beings, and that we can also become human beings. It's very common. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it is said, had arguments and discussions with this Bankim Chandra Chatterjee for 4 days. And they went into great detail discussing philosophy and everything. And finally it appears that he was able to convince Bankim Chandra on the strength of logic, on the strength of scripture, that Krishna was not a human being. He was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how much austerity, you know, a preacher has to undergo, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur tried to establish these teachings in the modern day world. So he wrote books, he gave lectures, he had discussions with all sorts of people, and even his next contribution was, as the deputy magistrate in the British government at that time, he utilized that position to punish miscreants who were misrepresenting the Vedic teachings in the path of devotion. And he also set proper standards for devotional life in different temples. I'll give a few examples. The most famous example is of a yogi, a mystic yogi called Bhishakshena. Now, You see, as it happens with some mystic yogis, they get some powers, and they also don't know how they have these powers. Many of them are born with these powers, which they discover as they move on in their life. Some of the yogis acquire these powers in this life by some practice of mystic yoga. But very often we see that these mystic yogis are born with these powers because of some mystic yoga practices they must have done in the previous life. So this Bhishakshena was of that kind. So he had these mystic powers and he would impress the gullible, innocent people. And they started, you know, worshipping him, and he proclaimed himself to be Mahavishnu. And everywhere people would fall at his feet and, you know, glorify him and proclaim him to be God. And he had two lackeys who he said were Brahma and Shiva. So they formed the Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh. And so ordinary people would get misled like this. See, these false avatars were a dime a dozen in India at that time. Srila Prabhupada one time said, the unfortunate fact of India is, in every second lane you will have some avatar, someone claiming to be an incarnation of the Lord. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur used his position, Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Sri Sri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Nitai ki jai. So he used his position as a responsible, powerful officer in the government to set things right. Now, as it happened, this Bhishakshena started claiming publicly that he would overthrow the British government and he would become the king of the land. So naturally, this alarmed the British government. So they deputed Bhaktivinoda Thakur to deal with this man. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur asked his officers to go and deal with Bhishakshena, but they were all afraid because he has such terrific powers, they didn't want to go. And plus he had a lot of public support. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur personally himself went there. And he said, why have you come here? Bhishakshena told him. He said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, please come with me. Let us go to Jagannath Puri, to the temple of Lord Jagannath, and you can have darshan there. So Bhishakshena arrogantly replied. He said, what do I have to do with that statue, little statue of wood? I am the Lord myself, don't you know? I am Vishnu, I am Jagannath, I am everything. So at that time Bhaktivinoda Thakur became very angry and he personally arrested Bhishakshena and he put him in jail. And then there was a hearing that went on. For 18 days consecutively there was hearing in the court over which Bhaktivinoda Thakur presided. Now every day in the court, which was, there were hundreds of people who would come there and protest and demand that this Bhishakshena be released from the court. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur stuck to his guns. He did not release him. And the hearing continued. The evidence was coming. Many people came forward saying he did this, he did that. On the sixth day of the hearing, the seven-year-old daughter of Bhaktivinoda Thakur fell very seriously sick. And she was almost on the verge of death. And the doctors had to be with her all night long. The doctors were not able to cure her. But as it were, miraculously, the little girl became all right in the morning by 8 o'clock. And she was jumping and playing around like before, as if nothing had happened. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur understood that this was the doing of Bhishakshena. He had these mystic powers by which he could do that. And then next day in the court, Bhishakshena told Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this is just a small exhibition of my powers. So this is a warning to you to desist from all these court proceedings. Just let me go and you become my follower. Bhaktivinoda Thakur got even more enraged. and he strengthened his resolve to punish this miscreant. So he continued with the hearings, and the next day he himself fell seriously sick. He had raging fever, and he was almost delirious. He couldn't stand. He had to be carried to the courtroom physically. But somehow or the other, he was able to think very clearly. And he sentenced this person, Bishak Sena, to 18 months of prison for conspiracy against the government, to overthrow the government and so on. So this person was dragged into the court, he was into the jail, and he was placed there. Now, as it happened, before that, when the sentence was pronounced, he was convicted and sentenced, naturally there was an uproar of protest. Even Bishak Sena rose up and threatened all sorts of dire consequences. At that time there was a doctor, and he was ready. Probably Bhaktivinod Thakur must have already arranged for that to happen. It was rumored that the powers of this yogi were in his long hair. Strange, but these things sometimes happen. So this doctor was waiting with long, big scissors. So as soon as the sentence was pronounced in the court, he leaped from behind and quickly snipped off the long hair of Bishak Sena. Now, Bishak Sena had been fasting, but still he was strong because of his yogic powers. But once the hair was cut, then he collapsed to the ground because now his normal physical condition manifested. And because he was so weak, he was sent to the jail, he was carried there, and he lost all his powers. And finally, I think it is said he took poison, and after a couple of months he died in the prison. So in this way, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur punished those people who were misleading innocent people by claiming that they were avatars. Unfortunately, the law in India today doesn't claim anything like that. I mean, I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, but if somebody just claims that I'm God, there's no law in the country that can punish such a person. Unless he does something illegal, he, you know, dupes somebody of money or something, then there are other provisions of the law. But simply to claim that I am God and get others to accept you as God is not an illegal act, unfortunately. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually set this right. He punished Bishak Sena. Another occasion in which he utilized his powers as the deputy magistrate to instill faith in the minds of people in the Srimad Bhagavatam was when one time complaints came to him that there was a ghost who was living in a banyan tree. And many people would go there to worship this tree. And there was a person, some kind of a mendicant, who used to live under the tree, and he was a worshipper of that ghost. And there were some complaints against this person, and he was hauled into court. So in order that he not be punished in the court, this man induced the people in the village to come and worship that ghost. And that ghost started creating a ruckus everywhere. And therefore this interfered with the system of justice in the court. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was pondering over what should be done now. And then he appointed some very sincere devotee of the Lord to go and sit under that banyan tree and recite the Srimad Bhagavatam from beginning to end. And this took one entire month. And this happened, and at the end of the month, again, something very extraordinary happened. That tree just crashed to the ground. And the ghost left that tree for good. It didn't come back. And when the people of the village saw this, they realized what had happened. They developed faith in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they also developed great faith in Bhaktivinoda Thakur and in the process of devotional service. Also later, when he was appointed, he was transferred to Jagannath Puri. He saw that the practices in the temple were not good. The priests over there sometimes were negligent in the performance of their duties. Sometimes they would do all sorts of wrong things. And one time even the king had usurped the money meant for the service of the deity. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur made the king sponsor the prasadam 52 times a day. And very quickly, because it was a lot of expense, you know, to have a feast 52 times a day for so many days, the money of the king, the treasury, was exhausted. And the king became furious. And secretly, he engaged certain tantrics, you know, people who do black magic, and secretly within his house, so that the public wouldn't know, in order to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur got information every single day of what was happening. And at the end of that, one of that period, actually it was the son of the king who died on the very last day. Nothing happened to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So in this way, he ensured that there was no corruption going on in the temple. And also, he sat down with the priests and established some good practices, the proper procedures of worship, the discipline in doing things. He also introduced very strongly a devotional element there by starting Srimad Bhagavatam discourses every day in the courtyard, in some place in the temple. In this way, not only was he a good manager and administrator, but because of his pure devotion, he ensured that there was a very strong devotional atmosphere that came about in the Jagannath temple. So this was a very important contribution of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Also, he established many Vaishnava societies from time to time at the different places that he lived in. The Bhagavat Samsat at one point, and later at another place, the Vishva Vaishnava Raj Sabha. Gatherings where devotees would come together and hear and speak from the Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his young days, had studied the books of all different religions, like the Bible, the Quran. He was quite fluent in Arabic, in Persian, and also he studied the English literature, as I mentioned earlier. But when he was about 30 years of age, if I'm not mistaken, roughly at that period, he got a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he was struck with wonder to read this book. And he read it again and again and again. And he became so affected by this, so influenced by it, so his life transformed. And he himself says that the seeds of pure devotion that had been planted in my heart now began to sprout. You see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not an ordinary sadhaka bhakta. He is an eternal associate of the Lord. In fact, in his own songs, he has revealed his identity in Goloka Vrindavan. Does anyone know what is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's identity in Goloka Vrindavan? Sorry? Kamala Manjari. He's Kamala Manjari. Kamala Manjari is an assistant of Rupa Manjari, who appeared as Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Manjari is an assistant of Lalita Sakhi. So in his songs, somewhere in the Gita Mala, I think Siddhi Lalasa is the name of the song, where he reveals his identity as Kamala Manjari, and in Goloka Vrindavan, she is 12 and a half years old eternally. The Manjaris are slightly younger than the Sakhis, who are assistants of Srimati Radharani. And he also describes his clothing, you know, like lightning. Is her dress is like lightning with a starry sky, you know, sprinkled with stars. So he revealed his original position in Goloka Vrindavan. So he's not an ordinary person. So it may seem, well, how is it so long that he took, by the time he was 30 years old almost, that's when he read Chaitanya Charitamrita for the first time, etc. But the Lord has his own plans for his associates. Many times they manifest their devotion to the external world only after a certain number of years have elapsed. In fact, Mahaprabhu himself, for the early years, assumed the role of a teacher of grammar and logic. It was only after he went to Gaya that there was a tremendous transformation, and he came back and began his devotional movement. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, by the arrangement of the Lord, came to propagate intensely the Krishna consciousness movement only at the age of 30. So he read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and thereafter he began, by his own admission, to read all the scriptures, the Bhagavatam, and he began to exhibit an enormous and deep taste for the holy names of Krishna and for the Srimad Bhagavatam and all the Vedic scriptures that had descriptions of Krishna. So then he started establishing these societies where he would gather devotees, like-minded people, and he would speak on the Bhagavatam, etc. And these Bhagavatam discourses made him very famous, and he was recognized as a great devotee and scholar. And one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's greatest contributions, of course, is that he identified the exact birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The place that is today Navadvip, known as Navadvip, the town, was originally actually Kulia, you know, Koladvip. And what is today Mayapur was then known as Navadvip. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was on the western side of the Bhagirathi, on the side where today's Navadvip is, he had a beautiful vision. He was on the terrace of his little house, and he was walking around. It was night time, and he was chanting, relishing the chanting of the holy names, and he saw something spectacular across the river. There was a tall tree. He saw something strange there, and next to it there was a small building, and there was some effulgence that was emerging from that building, and he didn't know what it was, but it was very clear. And then he began to research this phenomenon. And there's a little background to this. By the time Bhaktivinoda Thakur was about 50 years of age, the desire to renounce the world, to retire from government service and go to Vrajabhumi and live there and perform bhajan on the banks of the Yamuna was becoming very intense. And he was time and again thinking, when will that day come when I can leave this job and I can go to Vrindavan and live on the banks of the Yamuna? So, as he was thinking, one day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in his dream and said, "You want to go to Vrindavan? Yes, one day your desire will be fulfilled. But I want you to do some service for me in Navadvip. So what will happen to that if you go to Vrindavan now?" So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur rose from his sleep and he revealed this dream to one of his close friends, who was also an exalted devotee. And his friend suggested, "Then maybe you should postpone your plans of going to Vrindavan. You should maybe ask the government to transfer you to Krishnanagar, to somewhere very close to Mayapur, Navadvip. Krishnanagar was the closest center where he could do that. With great difficulty, somehow or the other, he swapped places with the deputy magistrate in Krishnanagar, and he came there. And then from there, he would try to research. He got copies of Chaitanya Bhagavat, he got copies of Narahari Sarkar's works, and he went into old maps and documents that were preserved in the government offices and with individuals here and there. He spoke to the elderly people in Navadvip, and together, after a long period of intense research and study, then he began to understand that this was indeed the place. And then he saw this vision of the transcendental place across the river. And he thought, this is the place of Mahaprabhu's appearance. And then finally, he came to Jagannathas Babaji, from whom he took Shiksha. And he took Jagannathas Babaji there. Jagannathas Babaji at that time was so old, he was completely bent over and he couldn't walk. So he had to be carried in a wicker basket on somebody's head. He was very frail, very weak. So he was carried there. And when Jagannathas Babaji was placed there on the ground, at that point, even though he was weak and he couldn't even stand, what to speak of walk, he leaped in the air and said, Hari Bol. And he confirmed what Bhaktivinoda Thakur had concluded about the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is probably one of his greatest contributions. So the Yogpeeth was identified. And he later established a place of worship for Gaur and Vishnupriya over there. So this is a very great contribution of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was initiated formally by Bipin Bihari Goswami, but he actually took Shiksha from Jagannathas Babaji. So when we see our Guru Parampara as described in the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita by Srila Prabhupada, we will see that before Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there is Jagannathas Babaji. So Jagannathas Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then Gaur Kishordas Babaji. Now, Gaur Kishordas Babaji also did not take initiation from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He took initiation from Bhagavad Das Babaji, Paramhamsa Babaji Diksha. But Gaur Kishordas Babaji used to come and hear the discourses of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So there was a Shiksha connection. So you see, the Sampradaya, the Parampara that is listed out in the Bhagavad Gita as it is, introduction, is a combination of Diksha and Shiksha. So he took Shiksha from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then he became the initiating spiritual master of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who in turn became the initiating spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada. So this is the Shiksha and the Diksha line. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's contribution therefore is immense, and we owe him a great deal. And on the day of his disappearance, we can offer our gratitude to him by remembering his lotus feet and begging for his mercy. Today is also the disappearance day of Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit is none other than Srimati Radharani. And it is said that Lalita Sakhi also entered into him at this time. He was a childhood friend of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'll be very brief about Gadadhar Pandit because we've overshot the time. And Mahaprabhu used to often tease him and taunt him and try to force him to enter into debate. One time he asked Gadadhar, "So Gadadhar, you are very scholarly. What is the definition of liberation?" And Gadadhar reluctantly would get into the debate and then said, "Liberation means the cessation of all miseries, the permanent cessation of all miseries." And Mahaprabhu loved to be the contrarian. You know, contrarian, always speak the contrary. You say something, he has to say the opposite. and he would establish that opposite. And then he would re-establish what the other person had said earlier. And he was brilliant at that. So he said, no, actually liberation is the state of complete absorption and misery. And Gadadhar said, what is that? Strange thing. And then he established that by his arguments. And then he would again establish what Gadadhar had said earlier. So Gadadhar was struck with wonder that this boy is a genius. He's not even just brilliant, he's something else. But he would wonder why Advaita Acharya and the others would hold him in such high regard. He didn't seem like a devotee of Krishna, at least at that time. But soon enough, he revealed his devotional nature. And then Gadadhar became his very staunch follower. And he constantly followed Mahaprabhu everywhere. And later, by one time, there was one particular small incident in which Mahaprabhu, in his period of feeling separation from Krishna, was asking everybody, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And Gadadhar Pandit told him, Krishna is in your heart. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the trance of ecstasy, with his nails, tried to tear open his heart so that Krishna, he could see where Krishna was. And then Gadadhar gently held his hands and consoled him and pacified him and said, don't worry, Krishna will reveal himself. He's there. And Sachi Mata was observing this in great anxiety. And she was immensely pleased with Gadadhar Pandit for having controlled and pacified her son. And she said, Gadadhar, from today, you should always be with my son and never leave him alone at any time. So Gadadhar Pandit stayed at a place called Yameshwar Tota. Tota means a garden. And there, by Mahaprabhu's mercy, Gadadhar found the deity of Gopinath. And that deity became known as Tota Gopinath. And Mahaprabhu gave Gadadhar Pandit three instructions. He said, you be an authorized teacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Gadadhar Pandit did that. He would so melodiously chant Srimad Bhagavatam. One time when Srinivas Acharya came there to see him, many years later, when Mahaprabhu had just disappeared, he wanted to hear Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. But Gadadhar said, I can't, because ever since the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'm crying tears of separation. And those tears have wiped away the ink from my copy of the Bhagavatam. So they're just manuscripts here without any print. So you'll have to get me another copy of the Bhagavatam. Eventually, Srinivas Acharya did manage to procure a copy. And then he heard Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. And then when Mahaprabhu wanted to leave for Vrindavan, Gadadhar wanted to come with him. And so Mahaprabhu said, no, you've taken Kshetra Sannyas, so you should stay on here. Gadadhar was heartbroken. And Mahaprabhu did not go to Vrindavan. He only went to Ramakeli and came back after meeting Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. And Mahaprabhu declared, because I displeased Gadadhar, I could not reach Vrindavan. So, in any case, the first instruction was to be an authoritative teacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. The second was that he should give Diksha to genuine seekers of Vrajabhakti. And the third was to worship Tota Gopinath and Srimati Radharani. So Gadadhar Pandit did that. He departed from this world very shortly, maybe a year or so after the disappearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on this very anniversary, on this day. So because Gadadhar Pandit is none other than Srimati Radharani, on this day of his disappearance, we can also pray at his lotus feet that he may shower his mercy upon us, because without Srimati Radharani's mercy, we cannot do devotional service. Sri Gadadhar Pandit Goswami ki jai, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hare Krishna.